chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
My goodness, Juventus once again is out of the Champions League for a second consecutive season. They're out in the round of 16 as they lose to Porto. Borussia Dortmund, Erling Haaland go through to the quarterfinals after beating Sevilla. We got Jimmy Conrad talking Tuesday. Champions League recap. Que golazo begins right now. Everybody, welcome to Que Golazo, our Tuesday recap of the Champions League. My God, what a finish, Jimmy Conrad. Juventus is out once again of the Champions League for the second straight season, out in the round of 16 for the third straight season. They couldn't make it past the quarterfinals. They obviously lost to Ajax in 2019 in the quarterfinals. The Ronaldo project still not working. And more importantly, specifically this season, Jimmy Conrad, the Andrea Pirlo gamble is really not paying off. Porto, hold on, with 10 men. They lose 3-2 on the night, but they win 4-4 in aggregate, due, of course, to the away goals. Jimmy Conrad, reaction as Juventus, Bianconeri, is done.
My first reaction is to commend Porto. They were so heroic in their performance after they went down to 10 men, and I thought it was a cheap second yellow that the referee gave to Taremi. That's why I'm wearing my referee. Not in solidarity, but almost to spoof these guys. I'm wearing a referee kit now. And to make that type of call, because if everybody that didn't see the game, he got a second yellow for kicking the ball away after the whistle blew. And it was reminiscent of when Robin Van Persie got one against Barcelona 10 years ago, 11 years ago.
Yeah, good call.
For what? It's just, okay, you could warn him. You could warn him, say, hey, listen, if you do that again, it makes so much of an impact on the game. Like, you don't have to make that decision. And the fact that he did was really disappointing. Up until that point, I thought that Juve didn't have a lot of answers. They were having a tough time breaking down Porto, who, once they scored that first goal, could sit back and just put two blocks of, you know, four or five guys and make it really difficult and try to counter with Taremi or Marega. Ronaldo, again, I think Porto's a team he just can't have success against. I think that is written in the stars. He's now lost to them. He didn't lose this game, I guess, per se, but they lost the tie overall. He's not.
You can't go against your blood, Jimmy. You can't go against your Portuguese blood.
I don't know. I don't even know where to start. I mean, Juve did themselves in. They gifted two goals in the first leg. The penalty that they gave up, there's some argument as to whether a penalty. Demiral should never, ever try to win the ball there. He should know where the attacker is. The guy's got his back to goal. If he does receive it, he's under heavy pressure. To give away a penalty in that situation, very naive, I thought, defensively. If Chiellini had been there, De Ligt maybe had started, then maybe that would have had a different outcome, you know? But you got this guy.
So let me narrate with you there, Jimmy. Let me narrate with you. So you have Oliveira scoring a penalty. So they're 1-0 up. So at this point, it's 3-1 Porto.
Right.
And that stays like that at halftime. And then, so take us to the second half then, as Juventus comes in guns blazing.
Well, the second half, the red card changes everything. So
right, that's gets the first
second, he gets a second yellow, and then it's the Federico Chiesa show. The guy absolutely.
Let me just add something
the first goal, though, was unbelievable, dude. Top corner. Oh,
Federico Chiesa is incredible. And we knew that he was going to do the thing, but Chiesa is ridiculous. I just wanted to add something what you said about the yellow card, the second. I tweeted this, and I got a lot of people. You know, Jim Beglin, great co-commentator with Peter Drury, he said, listen, it's so ridiculous that, like, the moment he kicks the ball up, every single Juventus player is running at the ref, like saying, send him off, send him off. And I feel like that was an added part to it. So my tweet was just basically, I just hate the fact that, like, every Juventus player, their first reaction is just to send him off. Like, that's not in the spirit of the game. And it really annoyed me. And everybody was saying, everybody on Twitter was like, you know, that their comment was like, well, it was a yellow. It was like, so that's not my point. That's not my point. My point is just the fact that it was very annoying to see that Juventus's player's first reaction is like, send him off, send him off, send him off. And of course, that set the narrative.
Yeah, it did set the narrative. And I thought it was one of those things, if we look back on a documentary, you know, the voiceover, it freezes on that red card and the voiceover comes in and says, and at this point, this is where UEFA wanted Cristiano Ronaldo to advance to the next round.
Yeah. No, this was like, Arrested Development, Ron Howard. Yeah,
exactly. Like, he comes in with the VO. They clearly want Cristiano Ronaldo to get to the next round. I will say there's no defense for that behavior, but I think it's because the high emotion of Taremi getting a yellow card 2 minutes earlier, right? So he got a yellow card for something else. 2 minutes later, he kicks the ball. He's clearly emotional about that. I just feel like with a ref of that experience, he should have said, hey, listen, I get that you're amped up. I understand this is a big game. If you do it again, I'll give you that. Of course, by the rule, people that can come in and say, oh, the rule of the law is he kicks the ball after the whistle. And I get that. But there's still interpretation. There's still a managing of players and emotions from a referee. And I thought that was a chance where the referee could have. And given his experience, I'm surprised that he didn't. But it just felt like, hey, this is a good opportunity to make some. It was a great game, don't get me wrong. And I'm glad Porto went through because I just thought that was a cheap second yellow. But let's now fast forward. Chiesa takes over. We could argue Chiesa's been Juve's best player this season, definitely over the last month or so. He just took it to another level, dude. The guy was on fire, and they're going to feel unlucky that they didn't get that third goal when you could sense that Porto was a little bit tired, because once they had that chance to kind of regroup in between the end of regulation and extra time, you knew that Sergio Conceição, the manager of Porto, was going to have something in place to give them some tactics to kind of survive that and hopefully get the penalties, but they didn't need it.
It's just an unbelievable, just hats off, because the conversation is going to be obviously about Juventus, that once again, they don't make it further on to the Champions League. They haven't won it, Jimmy, since 1995, 1996. You know, this is not, to the tone of our fellow social media colleague, Tosin McKinney, they're very unserious when it comes to this Champions League tournament. They're just not with it. And I wonder if it's like them also not adapting to the modern style of the game. You know what I mean? I don't see anything dynamic about Juventus. Not in the Champions League. You've said it a lot of times. Serie A is a different kettle of fish. And obviously this season not included because Inter Milan is looking good for it. But the fact that they can't go further, you know, hats off to Porto. Amazing. But you're Juventus and you have the best player in the Champions League playing for you. You've got Chiesa, who's fantastic. You beefed up your midfield with Arthur, Weston McKennie, Rabiot, Aaron Ramsey's playing well. You know, Matthias de Ligt, right? Meant to be the next best thing. Obviously, he didn't play today, but still, the run-up to it, Juan Cuadrado, etc. And you can't still get it done. And then you gambled on a legendary player as your manager with no experience as a manager. What do you expect? What do you expect? And now the Coppa Italia final is really honestly the only thing that you can say.
Yes. I'm just going to say, in defense of Andrea Pirlo, for everybody that's watching, I have a little shrine to him. He's my
Lord. Oh, my God. He's amazing.
And he's amazing.
A legendary player.
But I'll say this. Whatever tactics that he had for the first leg went out the window when Bentancur gave up a bad ball right in front of goal. Like, you can't.
Yeah.
What are you supposed to do there, right? I mean, the only thing you can prepare your team for there is the fact that, hey, listen, I think FC Porto is going to come out 100 miles an hour and try to punch us in the face to get kind of set the tone for this game. Just be prepared. These guys are playing at a pretty high level. They should just know that inherently. I don't think you need a manager to tell you that Porto is going to be coming out 100 miles an hour. Okay, so then let's say this. Okay, so it's 1-0 at halftime of the first leg. Then the second, the start of the, you go into tactics. So Andrea Pirlo comes out again. Hey guys, listen, I think they're going to come out 100 miles an hour to start the second half to try to set the tone again. I got him a goal in the first half. You give up a goal 20 seconds into the second half. I mean, I just don't know what coaching can do there. If you guys aren't switched on when it's time to play, I don't know what else you can do for them. You can't hold their hand and play for them. And those are the two goals that we're going to look back on, at least as a Juve fan, and say, that's where we lost the tie. We still had a chance though. Despite those mistakes, we still had a chance. I don't think they're too far off, but I will say that I don't think they're well balanced as a team. I think they have some guys that are aging a little bit and some younger guys that are still learning how to take on that responsibility. You got Juan Cuadrado, who's had a renaissance as a wing back, outside back. I'm surprised his right leg is still on, by the way, because he whipped in like 60 crosses this game.
And his crossbar shot had to be with his left, which was amazing.
That's the only one he had power left because his right was dead at that point.
Left.
I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is for Juve. I think you got to move on from Cristiano Ronaldo at this point. I think there's going to have to be some sort of reset button, and you kind of keep the players that you can sense are going to help you move forward, and you're going to have to shed the ones that aren't, and then you're going to have to make some signings and figure it out. I mean, Paulo Dybala really hasn't reached the heights that I think we know he's capable of, not consistently at least. Ramsey, does he really fit? I never saw really Ramsey as a Juve player. Rabiot was an interesting one. I thought he played okay today, even though at the end he should have whipped that one into the back post to Cristiano. That probably could have won the game, perhaps. I don't know. Their center backs are getting old. De Ligt hasn't really hit those Ajax heights, you know, so it's tough. It's tough. I don't really know. I don't think they're too far off, but there's still something's the balance is off. I don't know how to explain it, but I guess this is just the team we're talking about, but to your point, they haven't won since 96. So this predates every single one of these players. They're still having these issues.
I wonder if a lot of it has to do with the fact that, and listen, like this is completely just an opinion. I think that sometimes Serie A teams are so focused on the rhythm of the flow of Serie A that when they play in the Champions League, it's a little bit difficult. It's a little bit different. The fact that they couldn't get it done after Mehdi Taremi got sent off in the 54th minute. It wasn't the 87th minute. It wasn't extra time. It was the 54th minute, right? Shortly after the beginning of the second half. And you still can't get it done. You have the greatest player of the Champions League with you. You still can't get it done. And sometimes I feel that Serie A clubs are so focused on, you know, maintaining some kind of cultural style rhythm of Serie A that when they play in the Champions League, it's a little bit different. Look at the defending champion, Bayern Munich, who is the ultimate example of the modern game, right? Look at the winners past before that, Liverpool, exactly the same thing with Jurgen Klopp, right? So my point with Juventus is, to your point, is they have to just, you know, when you buy a car and you love it, but after 10 years, you got to kind of like, you know, either buy a new one or modernize it. I feel that that's what's happening with Juventus. You got to kind of like, and maybe they do have to move on beyond Ronaldo because it hasn't happened once again, you know, third straight season, once again. And that's a big deal. But honestly, with this season, hiring Pirlo as your manager with no experience was really naive, I think, because I think there are other managers that perhaps could have done something, especially if your goal is to go really far in the Champions League.
Yeah, I guess to your point with regard to that, Chelsea, to their credit, were like, listen,
they learned the lesson.
Lampard's a club legend. He just wasn't ready for this gig yet, doesn't have enough experience. We're going to move on to somebody that does.
And he's somebody, by the way, that was already managing.
That's true. But still not enough, I would say. And then Tuchel comes in, and yeah, it's not pretty all the time with Tuchel, but it's effective. And they're getting results, and they're probably going to finish in the top four. And, you know, so, and they're probably going to beat Atletico Madrid in the Champions League because Tuchel just finds a way to be very effective. So, and then once they figure it out on both sides of the ball, they're going to be hard to stop that Chelsea team. And we saw that earlier this season. Maybe that's what Juve needed to do. They're like, all right, we're not, Pirlo's not the guy. It's clear that there's still something lacking a little bit. Let's bring in somebody that can. I don't know who you bring in. I guess that would be the next question after that. Maybe Pochettino could have been somebody at that time. I don't know, but he is lacking. Maybe there are some tactics that are naive, but again, with regard to this tie, he can't play for these guys. And those first two goals they gave up in the first leg were just going to be very hard to overcome, especially against a team like Porto that didn't give up a lot of goals.
Yeah, absolutely. And just final thing, Porto, well done. And Pepe, 38 years old, old age and treachery will always beat youth and exuberance. That's a David Mamet quote, and that fits Pepe to a T. Absolutely beautiful. Hey, stay right here, because when we come back, we have Borussia Dortmund going through, as well as they essentially beat Sevilla. Well, no, they do. They do beat Sevilla on full two. Stay here with myself and Jimmy Conrad. Que golazo. We'll be right back.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Welcome back, everybody, to Que Golazo. This is our Tuesday Champions League recap. Jimmy Conrad here, of course. Jimmy, we now discuss, and we're both upset about this. We both discuss now Borussia Dortmund through to the quarterfinals against Sevilla. It was 2-2, super entertaining. Haaland on one side, but Sevilla, thanks to Youssef and Nesri, got 2 goals, one in the 68th minute of penalty and the 90-minute plus 6 minute of stoppage time, equalizing a great header. But it wasn't enough as Borussia Dortmund go through in a 5-4 aggregate. Jimmy, I wanted Sevilla. You wanted Sevilla. Obviously, we knew how dangerous Borussia Dortmund were, but I feel like Sevilla shot themselves in the foot a little bit. Talk to me about this game.
Well, I don't know if it... Well, they definitely shot themselves in the foot. That goes without saying. Jules Koundé. Listen, I love this young center back, 22-year-old, French international. He's going to be a name we talk about for a long time, and I think at some point a big club's going to buy him. But this last month in particular, he's been poor. I'm just going to say it. He's been poor. I'm a former center back. I watch these guys intensely, and he has been poor. And I've been singing his praises throughout this whole season. Until this last month, I've been kind of a little quiet, wondering when he's going to pick it back up again. Him and Diego Carlos, another center back we've been talking about, also poor. And the results reflect it. He makes a mistake. I thought maybe you could argue Thomas Delaney running in like a madman to run him over. The referee could have called a foul. He didn't. Okay, fair play. And then the goalkeeper slow to react to the through ball, and then Erling Haaland scores the first one, which really sucks, I think, for Sevilla, because for the first 30 minutes, they were in complete control. Complete control. Up until that point, they were in complete control. That was the 35th minute. And that's a shame. They just lack that cutting edge. And I think I'm emotional right now because I hate when I miss my bets, man. I feel a great deal of responsibility when I'm advising people to consider certain things that I know what the hell I'm talking about. And we weren't too far off today, Luis. And it's a shame because Sevilla made some plays and you just can't account for these player mistakes. At some point, I thought Jules Koundé and Diego Carlos are like, these guys are good enough to stack up Erling Haaland and keep him quiet, but yet Erling Haaland finds a way to score 2 goals. So fair play to Erling Haaland. I mean, the guy is ridiculous. There's only been 7 players, by the way, everybody, that have scored more than 4 goals or more in the round of 16 over 2 legs. Okay, and he is now the 7th player on that list. Messi actually is number 1. He scored 6 against Bayer Leverkusen back in the day, which is next level. And actually, let's talk. Leo Messi needs to score 6 against PSG tomorrow to actually help them go through, which is not going to happen, but we wish him the best.
It's absolutely incredible. By the way, Haaland has already scored more Champions League goals than Totti, Ronaldinho, Zidane, R9, Adriano, Carlos Tevez, Falcao, Lukaku. He's only 20 years old. This is a tremendous player. The youngest player ever to score 20 Champions League goals. Not enough to talk about him. Of course, he's incredible. We all know this. He's amazing. And the thing is, though, Jimmy, in this game, we thought that, listen, Haaland was going to do his thing, no doubt. But we thought Sevilla were going to be a little bit more compact, a little bit more aggressive, and they were going to win this game. But Borussia Dortmund is still going through. The problem was, to your point, was too many moments in this game where Sevilla were basically asking Borussia Dortmund to almost take control. There were too many defensive errors. It was a little frustrating.
Just bad giveaways and bad spots, Luis. I think that's what pisses me off the most. And I guess if you're trying to force the game a little bit from the back and you're trying to create those numerical advantages because Borussia Dortmund are in that Christmas tree formation, so the gaps probably aren't the same as they're used to. And so now you're asking your center backs, Diego Carlos and Koundé, to maybe take some more risk, maybe take that space in front of them to try to drag a Borussia Dortmund player to them, so which creates space in the next line, right? And we just saw a lot of giveaways, which ultimately led to quite a few chances for Borussia Dortmund. That one where the penalty is initially called the foul on Haaland. I know they ended up calling that back and then calling
that was so weird. That was such a weird moment.
Man, it's VAR at its worst. I haven't decided if it's at its best or at its worst with that regard to regard it to that sequence. But yeah, ultimately Sevilla, when they look back at these two legs, are going to kick themselves because they just gave away goals. And when you play against a generational talent like Erling Haaland is emerging to become and already be, he's going to punish you for these little mistakes. And that's what world-class players do. And Sevilla just weren't good enough over the two legs.
Yeah, you can't do that. I mean, look at these stats, man. Like then Sevilla closing in on 20 shots, right? Possession nearly 70%. And Borussia Dortmund managed to tie that game 2-2.
It's 70% possession. And I just...
It's just not good enough.
No, it's not. But then they have that urgency at the end. And so I don't... I want to say I had some issues with Lopetegui's starting 11, but they were so good that first 30 minutes. Then they make one mistake. They switch off. Koundé gets, you know, caught out of position. And then everybody's got to make up for it. And then Haaland scores and then their heads go down. Right. And then Dortmund's got the momentum. He brought on Papu Gomez in the 60th minute. I thought that changed a few things, right? Because he can play in between the lines. He can play under pressure, but that put a lot more emphasis on Koundé and Carlos and Fernando in the back to really be isolated 1v1 with Erling Haaland, which is never a good look. And yeah, it was just too much to ask for at that point. Once Borussia Dortmund scored first, Sevilla really needed to score first, I think, to end up winning this game.
Yeah, we said that.
They didn't get it done. But that 70% possession just adds to my frustration. And I'm disappointed. I wanted to see Sevilla get to the quarterfinals for the second time in their history. And they're just a Europa League team. I've decided they prefer to play on Thursdays than on play on Tuesdays and Wednesdays when they're playing in Europe. Because for whatever reason, they've got the magic sauce in the Europa League, but just can't get it done when the title of the tournament changes to Champions League.
Well, like I said on CBS Sports HQ, man, they are the Conor Harahan of European football. They're just not quite Champions League material. They're not, as Conor is not quite Premier League material, but they're just a little lower than that. And that's Europa League. And that's where they rule the land. And just one more point, by the way, about this game is that the thing is, the narrative was exactly what we thought. They did control at the very beginning. It's just that you got to make it count. And that's what makes this game so beautiful and so tragic when it goes against you. That momentum, honestly, doesn't mean anything because all it takes is just one moment where you have a lapse of concentration. And that's exactly what happened.
Let's talk about both teams then moving forward. For me, Sevilla, right? They lost in the second leg of the Copa del Rey semifinals after being up 2-0 in Barcelona. They lost. So they're not playing in the final. They're now out of Europe. And they are in fourth, only 3 points ahead of Real Sociedad for that last spot in La Liga. Now they can focus all their attention on that. And that might be in their best interest, to be honest. Had they taken that one extra step in the Champions League, that's just more energy committed to something else. And Sociedad's already out of the Europa League. They lost to Manchester United in the last round. So this might not be the worst thing for Sevilla if they want to secure that Champions League, you know, qualification for next season. But it is a little disappointing given how good they are and how much success they've had in Europe in general. But always it's about the Europa League.
Yeah, they're very much, they're going to follow the Inter Milan trend, right? Now all you focus on the league. And by the way, remaining matches, they have Atletico Madrid to play and Real Madrid. But after that, like, every game is doable. So as long as they stick to that Champions League spot, to be honest with you, Monchi and co and the entire club will be happy because to them, it's about making sure that they continue having European football, specifically the Champions League.
Well, this weekend they got the Seville derby against Real Betis. So
it should be a good one.
Betis are only 6 points behind them. It's and the way their current form is, I actually would put my money on Betis at this point. I mean, that's probably what we'll preview in our weekend preview podcast. But it's definitely one to watch.
Yeah, and Real Betis is sixth in the league. Hey, but what about Borussia Dortmund? Very quickly, how far do you think they can go in this tournament?
It depends on the draw. You know, I mean, I think if they're not a team you're going to want to face, if Jadon Sancho is healthy, we can get Gio Reyna healthy. You can get everybody back to full strength. Guerrero can come back into the team. They're not a team you're going to want to face.
Haaland, anything's possible. Right?
Exactly. And so I don't know if they're going to win the competition. I think at some point you're going to run into a team that knows how to stack up Haaland accordingly, or at least not allow him to get the balls in spots that he likes to get and to be able to run at a back four, which is where he's most dangerous. I mean, the guy can run and his movement when he plays and moves is incredible. It's really incredible. And he runs with such purpose, right? He's going to get it, and he runs like he knows he's going to get it back.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to defend if you see – if somebody's playing like that and they already have ideas after they've played the ball. And at that point, as a defender, you're reacting. And when you're trying to react to a striker who's that strong and fast and purposeful – You mentioned it on HQ. He has shades of R9 Ronaldo. He really does. I've played against R9 Ronaldo, so I can speak to it a little bit.
What a line, by the way. Oh, my God.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it was. It's an incredible experience, and I probably learned more in those 90 minutes than at any other 90 minutes in my whole entire life. I mean, just that was a masterclass I got exposed to. Of course, he's got Zidane playing him the ball and Roberto Carlos whipping him in and David Beckham from the other side and Raul dragging you into spots so R9 can run behind you. Incredible, right? But his strength and pace and his purpose when he plays and moves, I've never seen anything like it. And I've played against some world-class players, Miroslav Klose, Hernan Crespo, the list goes on and on and on. So he reminds me of that. I see a little bit of that. I'm not going to anoint him as R9 Ronaldo just yet. He's going to be Erling Haaland, his whatever version he is of himself. But we're seeing shades of somebody that is going to be very special, and I can't say enough about him.
Yeah, no, there's traits of it. That's why I said it. I totally agree. There's total traits of it. Bottom line, he's unplayable. There's no solution to it. When he's on, just get out the way. It's just very difficult. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be very interesting, as you mentioned, who they get in the draw. But that's it. That's our show today. Jimmy Conrad, obviously will be back as well, we already taped our preview for Wednesday, but also the recaps, weekend preview, etc. Jimmy Conrad, always a pleasure, my friend.
Always a pleasure. And I love these weeks. I feel like I talk to you more than anybody else in my life over this. Like, my wife's like, who's this Luis Miguel Echegaray guy? Like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. You're like my mistress.
I'm your guma. Jimmy, thanks a lot, brother.
Thank you, Luis.
Hey, everybody. I want to thank Jimmy Conrad for joining me today. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Que Golazo Pod, and send us questions. We also have there, if you go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher, or even CBSSports.com, we already have our Wednesday Champions League preview. We have a great interview with Martin Braithwaite. We have so much content. So make sure that you follow us, leave a comment, and help us grow and grow. Send us tweets, send us questions. We love to hear from you. Have a great, great evening. And see you next time.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.